Let's talk to Dr. Steve Salzman, Green Care Medical. Dr. Steve, how was your weekend?
Okay, listen, I need to finish up one thing that Lou didn't mention. I want to tell all the Bears fans, how the Rodgers experiment would go, right? Brady, right, it comes into Tampa, 1 year, Super Bowl, everything's great. Rodgers comes into Chicago, 8-8, early exit in the playoffs. And that's the way it would go, you know?
That's just the way it is. It is the way it feels, isn't it? There's like this curse on it or something. I don't know. I'd have to go from really hating Aaron Rodgers to really liking him if he became the Bears quarterback. But I could get over that if he started to win. I'd do that.
I don't know. Yeah, but both him and his predecessor have caused me so much pain, like the real pain. I can't handle that. No more. I'm good.
We're going to get to pain coming up, so I'm glad you teased that ahead. Thank you, Dr. Steve. You're getting very good at this whole broadcasting thing. I just want to ask you, right out of the gates here, it's the one-year anniversary of the very first case in the Chicago area. At that time, we believed it was isolated. The health officials here were hoping, but they believed that it was one woman who had traveled to China, had visited relatives there, came back home. She got it. Her husband got it. And both of them recovered nicely. They actually had a nice interview with them in the Tribune, I believe it was, talking about how well they took care of them and they didn't treat them as a case. They treated them as humans, even though, you know, they were the center of the universe there for a while. But how this has come and, you know, where we are now with two vaccines rolled out, and it's pretty incredible to think about that, too.
Staggering on multiple levels, right? Staggering on the death toll and the misery financially, economically, through health, through mental health. I mean, it's staggering, right? And then on top of that, you know, you think about all the other stuff involved with this and what science had to produce it and the amount of time it was produced. It's unbelievable. I mean, really, it's unbelievable. And you know, I think actually modern medicine has significantly advanced as a function of what's happened. Unfortunately, you know, this is 10, 20 years down the line. But nonetheless, we've grown from this event. There's no question.
Yeah, there isn't. And there's so much hope now with this vaccine. I know there was a little bit of conflicting news today about the Moderna vaccine and whether or not it covers the South African variant, which they say could be more potentially contagious. Talk about what we know about that. These vaccines that are out here that are in distribution in the U.S., do they cover these new strains, the U.K. and South African strains of COVID?
So how funny, not funny, was it that on Friday, what did I say, right? We talked about the British one, but the one I'm concerned about is South African. And literally, by Monday morning, here we are talking about the variant I was concerned about. Long and short is that the Moderna vaccine is effective against these new variants that have emerged, both in Britain and South Africa. But what's happened is that there's some evidence that it appears to be less protective against the one that's from South Africa, that variant. And so what they're doing, Moderna, is because of this messenger RNA technology, they're sort of already in the process of developing a new form of a vaccine that can be used, quote-unquote, as a booster shot. And this all comes about. Moderna reported findings from a study where they took some blood samples from 8 people, by the way. It's not a large study here. But some of them received 2 doses of the vaccine. They also had 2 monkeys that had been immunized. And basically what they found was that British variant really had no impact on the levels of neutralizing antibodies. These are the antibodies, the type that can sort of, you know, disable the virus. It fights our virus, the virus that comes into our body, that's produced after you get vaccinated. But the South African form showed that there was a 6-fold reduction in those antibodies. So basically, even though the levels had dropped, the vaccine still remained protective, even though there was that decrease. You know, this is very complex science that they're looking at, but what they don't want is because that they're developing these new variants, what we don't want is it to get ahead of us so that it goes through enough mutations so that the virus teaches itself how to infect, and now we've got to start all over again. So that's sort of what's driving this. But there's nothing to be, extra afraid of. This was bound to happen if the virus is going to mutate. And likely the mantra, wear your mask, socially distance, and get the vaccine as soon as you can.
All right. It doesn't change how we respond to it, but it's interesting to sort of track these things. Because, you know, there's concern. There's concern if I get the vaccine, could there be a new variant that it would not be all that effective against? It sounds as if this one does protect. The Moderna is saying that it does protect against the South African strain may be a little less effective. Is that fair, or how do you read it?
Yeah, I read it as a cautionary tale of let's take closer looks at things, but would it change anything? Because, you know, when you're really looking at the black and white of the situation, you're saying, is this vaccine effective? Yes or no? And the answer is yes. You know, to get into the nitty gritty like we do to discuss it is, you know, interesting from sort of an academic standpoint. But in the end, you want to know, does this work or doesn't it work?
Right.
And the answer is it works. It, you know, Anna, it's going to have to go through quite a few mutations until these vaccines essentially won't be effective. And that's not going to happen if, in fact, this vaccine plan that we're planning is enacted appropriately. I don't think it'll have time to do that, to be honest.
Okay, it's good to hear. I saw also this news that the government's planning on banning, that anybody who's traveled to South Africa because they're trying to limit the spread of that strain in this country. So that sort of, travel ban has been reimposed by the Biden administration. I got the sense that it was already here though. Isn't it already in the United States?
You know, I don't know if they actually have a confirmed case, but you know, there's travel between places and stuff. So if we haven't found it today, they'll be here. You know, the virus will be here tomorrow or the next week or the next month. You know, if you want to try to prevent mass outbreaks, it's going to be very hard. You see how hard, you know, it was to prevent COVID. Wham, ravaged right through the entire earth, you know, just like
right.
that. So you're right. So, you know, same sort of situation. You want to try to, you know, stem the source, but yes, I think we have to expect that variant is going to be present here. And by the way, these new variants are going to be potentially, you know, like we said, you know, spread easier, maybe even make people sicker, God forbid. This is a possibility. That's why it's a novel virus. If you're hit with this for the first time and your body doesn't recognize it, all bets are off. But if you're vaccinated and your body can fight against it, you're not going to die. And that's the point. Get vaccinated.
Okay. Fair enough. And to the point. Dr. Steve, on the other side of this, we have to pause, but I do want to ask you, you mentioned something on Friday when you were on with us. You talked about how there are techniques that you use in your practice to battle pain and battle some other types of ailments that can be effective. You had a big name for it, and I don't for the life of me remember that name. Can you tell us the name?
Neuroplasticity.
Okay. Thank you. I know nothing about neuroplasticity, but maybe you can explain it to us in ways like you always do that are easy to understand coming up here. Dr. Steve Salzman, Green Care Medical, here with us. And tell us about this neuroplasticity, because when we were mentioning this, let me just remind everyone how this came up. On Friday, we were talking about how months out after getting COVID, there's still a large number of people who report having this loss of smell and taste. It seems like there could be worse consequences, absolutely, but that is something that is being tracked that a lot of people do report. And you said, well, you know, there's some things you do in your practice, and it has to do with usually battling pain. There are techniques that help people go after what's ailing their body. So let's hear about it.
Okay. First of all, let's understand that instead of just being a doctor, I'm a patient, right? I was the surgeon. I was the surgeon who did the exposures for the guys, and the guys who I did the exposures for eventually cut on me. I've had 8 of them, right, in all 3 areas of my spine, and have had a whole run of misery. So with that, this is what built Green Care Medical. I was like, oh, my God, if me, trauma surgeon, I know everybody, and I was lost, you know, completely, and hammered lost. Like, you know, when I tell you something, when you wake up and you can't walk and you have a walker and you don't have bladder control, things change. And there is, your brain will then get hold of you and take you down even further. And one of the problems that got me all of these surgeries was the unbelievable searing neuropathic pain, that nerve pain, that burning pain. I literally felt like my butt was on fire. And every single person that has it in the audience listening is shaking their head wildly right now. So, you know, we talked about, like, how do you get control of things? And then came this concept of something called neuroplasticity. Basically what it is, it's the ability of these neural networks in our brain to change through growth and reorganization. You're changing neuron pathways to make new connections. Basically, it's like toilet training the brain. Your brain adapts to changes in an environment by forming new neural connections over time. And that's what goes after traumatic brain injuries, PTSD, all these things, and pain syndromes and stuff. And guess what helps all of these things? We'll say, how do you do that? What is the first thing I always say? It didn't matter who I saw in our practice. What was wrong with them? It didn't matter. Every single patient had insomnia, anxiety, or depression. And the very first thing, phase one, was fix their sleep. Because the brain needs sleep to reset brain connection. And when you get that deep stage four sleep, where you are actually dreaming, that's the poor man's way to know you're there, that's when people have that restorative sleep and they start to recover, and you can reset the brain. Patients, it's not when you sleep 6 to 7 hours a night, you are all better, your pain's going to go away. It's if you don't sleep, we can't impact your pain. And there's a very big difference. And it's going after people and fixing things one at a time, but training their brain. And by the way, how do I know that works? Because when we use our gummies, right, we use gummies and the cannabis gummies to get patients to sleep. And then once they start sleeping over night after night, 6 to 7 hours, 6 to 7 hours all the time, you would think we would have to wean them back off the gummies and stuff. But in fact, what happened was, their brain reset, and they just went back to sleep, and they stopped reaching for the gummies themselves. So it was very odd to watch it play out, like, on a very clinical basis. But that's sort of the quick version. I mean, my God, I can pontificate about this till tomorrow, so you know, right. We got limited time.
But you do find that those types of techniques have been helpful, and it's really interesting, because if anyone who has anybody near them, close to them, or themselves dealing with any kind of chronic pain, you know that starts, it becomes all encompassing, right? Like, it just becomes your existence in some ways, dealing with that and how to combat it. It's a real problem.
Yeah, it ruins lives. It ruins families. It makes people the worst human beings, between the narcotics and the bone-searing pain. And every story, Anna, that they come in, every single one, all their lives are demolished. And it's not a function of them being bad people. It's a function of they can't get their brain back under control. And once your brain has a hold of you like that, that's a wrap. So you got to come up with an algorithm to fix it, or you're just going to languish in hell. That's what happens.
Well said. I mean, my husband David, you know this, he's dealing with post-herpetic neuralgia, which is basically he had shingles, and he has the lingering effects of shingles, and it's nerve issues and pain, and he is the ambassador for the shingles vaccine, because all of his friends are like, whoa, dude, what happened? What, really? Like, you're still having pain? You have 2 years out now? And he does. And so it can be all-consuming and defining, and if you figure out techniques to deal with it, I know people are all ears. We can go back, we'll circle back on that another day too, because I think it's worth that. I've got some questions coming in for you, Dr. Steve, but I also want to get to this one headline here. Fat but fit is a myth, they say, when it comes to your heart health. Like people who say, you know, I have a little fat, and who doesn't? But I work out enough, and I exercise, or I run, or I walk. So though that's okay. They're saying there still is something you need to worry about.
The European Journal of Preventive Cardiology two Thursdays ago, quoting, "You cannot be fat but healthy." What they showed was being regularly active is not likely to eliminate the detrimental health effects of the excess body fat that people were carrying. Basically, even though this is retrospectively reviewed data, they took almost 528,000 working adults from Spain, average age of 42, threw them into three groups of activity level and body weight. So 42% of the people's normal body weight with a normal BMI, the, you know, 20 to 24, 41% were overweight, and then 18% of them were obese. And they looked at the cardiovascular health, and what they categorized it was with diabetes, high cholesterol, and hypertension, which were all these major risk factors, right, for stroke and heart attack. Here's what they found. The greater cardiovascular risk for the overweight and obese patients, right, it was compared to those with normal weight, regardless of how much exercise they did. So they could exercise and exercise and exercise, but if they were obese or, you know, or holding even more weight, morbidly obese, it didn't matter. They were still struggling. And say, well, what about the obese but active? They were twice as likely to have high cholesterol. They were four times likely to have diabetes, five times likely to have hypertension. And those, you know, of those, by the way, who were of normal weight but inactive. So basically, and by the way, they separated this in men and women as well. So basically, if you're obese and inactive, it's the killer. You know, if you're running, you know, and you're fat, but you're doing some stuff, that might not fly either. And I wouldn't say if, you know, you're not fat and just lying around, that's good either. But certainly, you can't just say, you know, well, I'm pleasantly plump, but I do this or that, that might not be enough. And by the way, I think a lot of cardiologists across this country feel the same way that this study says.
Yeah, that's interesting because, well, look, excess body fat, come on, let's be honest. After a certain age, it's pretty hard to not have some of that going on. I mean, really. But it just, they are linking this to the heart health, and that's something to keep on the radar, I suppose, right? It just sort of feels as if even though you're running and doing stuff, that maybe you still got to pay attention to that connectivity.
Well, listen, Anna, there's one thing with vanity, but there's another thing when you're dealing with, you know, disease processes that right. can literally kill you. I mean, there's a very big difference.
Okay, speaking of the fried food study, never like these fried food studies because they don't typically, kind of favor the eat more fried foods. They tend to bottom line you by saying, you know what, you're probably eating too many fried foods. But talk about this one here because even a small portion of fried foods can increase your risk of heart disease. That's the other headline I wanted to get to before we get to the questions.
Yes. So, okay. So, of course, eating fried foods may increase risk of major heart disease and stroke. I mean, gee whiz. Well, breaking news. Those who ate the most fried food per week were 28% high in this study, were 28% higher of a risk of major cardiovascular events. And this is an analysis that they did of existing research. 22% higher, greater risk of coronary artery disease, and 37% risk of heart failure. So, and what they said, which is even more upsetting, is each additional weekly serving of 114 grams of fried foods, by the way, McDonald's, 117 grams of McDonald's fries, it increased the risk for heart attack and stroke by 3%, heart disease by 2%, and heart failure by 12%. So, ladies and gentlemen, if you don't limit the intake of fried foods, you know, there's going to be a problem, you know. And by the way, you gotta not replace the fried foods, you know, with ice cream and sweets, because that'll defeat the purpose as well. You know, listen, crap in, crap out. If you're driving a nice Mercedes or perhaps a Ferrari, you're gonna put in what, the cheap gas? No, I don't think so.
No, very well said. I got the image in my mind. Thank you. Hey, ask Dr. Steve, Anna, what he thinks of melatonin to help with sleep. I also hear people talking about magnesium, certain forms of that. Melatonin is the question.
Yeah, the melatonin, the answer is yes. I take it. You know, it's safe. I think, you know, depending, you could start off at a low dose and stuff, but it's safe. I take it as a sleep aid. I think the things that are important are what you do before you go to sleep, more important than even taking a pill or a potion or a powder or something, because if, you know, you need to settle your brain down. That's why staying away from the iPad and staying away from the iPhone and don't go on social media and it's not time to watch the news. And, you know, when you're ready to go to bed, you got to like settle your brain down, a book, a warm shower. You know, these are things that you probably want to focus on. And then we could talk about, you know, sort of supplementing on top of that. But you got to do the good things first.
Okay. Vaccine questions. When you get the vaccine for COVID-19, are you contagious to people you come into contact with afterwards?
No, absolutely not. There's no live virus in this. This is a brand new technology. So there is no preservatives in this. There is no live virus in this. And you are not contagious to anybody. And if you get, and if everybody, ladies and gentlemen, after the second dose, expect that you're not going to feel good. Some people have felt terrible. Some people have felt totally fine like I was. It doesn't matter. Just expect it. But that does not mean you're infected or you have COVID. This is not live virus. You cannot get COVID from this vaccine. It's only stimulating an immune response so that your body can fight it if, God forbid, you are exposed. Still wear your mask after you're vaccinated.
Okay. Finally here, just a few seconds left. I have ask the doc, please, Anna. I have a choice of either Moderna or Pfizer. I've been invited to two different locations. One has Moderna, one has Pfizer. Which one should I get? Is one more effective against that South African strain?
No, like Dr. Fauci said, the one that you can get when it's available, get it. If you want to talk about the stats, you know, I think Moderna was 94.1%, the Pfizer was 95%. I mean, we're splitting hairs here. Either one is totally fine. You're protected with either one of them. Just make sure a two-dose regimen, two shots.
Okay. Thank you, Dr. Steve. Go Bears.
I'm very happy. Yeah, everyone thinks I'm very
Let's not go back to that. Okay, forget I said that. All right, have a good afternoon. We'll talk to you later, okay?